Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We're going to finish Constitution Week, or actually almost a month. And I hope you don't mind my long lingering on this. I believe that these things need to be recorded. These need to be put down. So hopefully, some of these days, and I got great feedback, by the way, on the information regarding the 14th Amendment. I think most people, the history on the 14th Amendment has perverted the minds of most people. Most people actually look at, on the conservative side, that this thing called the 14th Amendment is this evil amendment. It took away states' rights when it did no such thing. So, anyway, let me kind of get into the obligatories. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that has the academic evidence, it provides you the academic evidence as well as the academic evidence-based solutions. And we point to the source documents, the absolute source documents and the founding documents of what created this constitutional republic and how it was defined and the terms of each of the clauses within the Constitution. So let me give the great plug to Timber Nation. As a matter of fact, you know I think highly of them, and I would highly recommend if you're looking for hardwood furnishings, and if you're looking for, you know, go price some of these things elsewhere. When I looked for an entertainment system, I actually looked at, and I'll forgive me for saying this because we actually had one. We went down the path of looking at a Salamander Entertainment Center. And that's just because we needed to replace the one that we had because we had some bulldog puppies and they gnawed on the bottom part of this entertainment center. And we realized that it wasn't hard wood. It was medium density fiberboard, which is the same thing as particle board, but it's designed more for sound purposes. But it's just as susceptible and capable of disintegrating and, or I should say, breaking apart because it just doesn't have the rigidity that a hardwood. Now, I know in building speakers for sonic purposes, MDF is a much better wood because of its consistency, that you don't have the bands of the rings of the tree and so forth, where there's an inconsistency throughout real natural wood. But I do not like the idea that when they make speakers with such a thin, cheap veneer. I mean, a good quality speaker has at least a good, you know, quarter inch veneer on it so that if something happens, you can always sand it down and refinish it without having to send it off to some professional to, you know, strip it down and re-veneer it. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Really? And that's just to show, you know, how cheap speakers have gotten. You got to spend a lot of money on speakers to have a good thick veneer because they don't make them out of solid wood. Just to be clear, they do not make speakers out of solid wood as far as hardwood. They make them out with a veneer with medium density fiberboard. Anywho, so check out TimberNation.com. Radio Dust Covers, www.radiodustcovers.com. If you're looking to protect your equipment, Ad Local, check out AdLocal.com. They're out of Michigan. And I want to tell you, maybe we'll dive into this, but we'll probably wait for next week because it is the end of the week and we want to get through this and probably have some editorializing on some things that I think, you know, we need to really talk about, such as because some of the things that have happened, like the testimonies of Miley and so forth, I think beg to be discussed, and I want to discuss these things, but I don't want to deter from our content. So let's wrap up the content after I tell you about Red Pill Expo, you're losing time, folks. If you haven't gotten your tickets, Red Pill Expo is right there, almost in the center of the United States. It's on the south center, but it's in towards the center. It's a reasonable drive. Make sure that you get your tickets so that you can be there and participate in a biannual, or actually, yeah, it's biannual. They do it twice a year. And these things are getting bigger and bigger, and you're going to see why. And we're going to have state legislators, and you're going to love, as a person, you're going to love the, instead of taking on Town Hall, become Town Hall segment, which is on Sunday afternoon. Now, I hope Harry's listening. I hope he's been listening to this entire diatribe regarding the Constitution. With that, we have a comment line, and you know what it is. It's 425-270-5416. And as a matter of fact, keep calling, because I will pick up sometimes, and I actually may call you back. So if I don't pick up, I'll at least call you back. And as a matter of fact, I was able to, Jason called a little while ago, about a week ago, and he was shocked that I called him back, but he was happy that we had the conversation. And I gave him full guns blazing, because he was accused. He says, well, you support the Convention of States, right? And I go, no. And I don't want to say ripped him into a new one, but I did, you know, emphasize it. Go online right now and go look at this and look at that. What does that say? You know, and I missed that point. And I go, well, before you start judging somebody, make sure you understand what you're doing. Make sure you understand where they stand and that type of thing. Anyway, with that, let me just dive into where we left off. We left off on the 25th Amendment. And if I don't dive into this now, then we will probably have to do another day of going through, and I'd rather kind of close this off at the end of the week. This is kind of perfect for a closing on the Constitution. This is the 25th Amendment to the Constitution. It was proposed in 65 and ratified in 67. Section 1. In case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Interesting, because this is right after Nixon was forced to resign and they removed him. And I don't know if he was impeached. Don't know if he was fully impeached yet. But anyway, Section 2. Whenever there is a vacancy, I should look that up. But I think they started going down that path, but I do know that the Senate never got there. I believe that Clinton was impeached, but the Senate actually met to whether they would impeach him, and they chose not to. And so they were the ones that judged whether he was to be impeached. Anyway, whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the president shall nominate a president who shall take office upon the confirmation by a majority vote of both houses of Congress. Now, here's the interesting thing. In the upcoming election in 1968, who was Nixon's running mate? I believe it was Rockefeller. And so I believe it was Rockefeller. I'd have to look at it, but I do know Rockefeller was his vice president, and he ended up changing, getting rid of Rockefeller and pulling in Ford in the next election in 1972. And so it was kind of interesting where we actually started seeing, you know, how these nominations and, or I should say, the dropping of one vice president and the pickup of another started becoming, you know, a common thing. People going, what? And the 25th Amendment kind of created that. Whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the president shall nominate a vice president who shall take office upon confirmation by a majority vote of both houses of Congress. So in other words, it only required both houses of Congress, not the people, to elect that vice president, where everywhere else, for a person to become vice president, to enter into that seat, the electors had to choose them. But while the president is in office, he can actually, so in other words, the president can actually run and have one president or one vice president. Then shortly after he takes office, he can get rid of that vice president by, you know, forcing them out and choosing another one and bypass the people altogether. Anyway, just throwing it out there. Section 3, whenever the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House his written declaration that he is unable to discharge powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits them a written declaration contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the vice president as the acting president. So what can play out is Biden himself can actually write a, you know, a, hey, I am not doing well. I am kind of sick. My mental capacities are really, you know, on the edge of snapping and or burning out and so forth. So the president can actually initiate his own stepping out. And it says right here that he can make a declaration that, you know, he's got his faculties back and he's good to go, ready to go another term. Section 4 is a little bit different. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide transmit to the president pro tempore, and by the way, the president pro tempore of the Senate is the vice president, and the Speaker of the House, let's just pick up Section 4 when we come back from this break. So we'll be right back with Section 4 of the 25th Amendment right after these two promos. We'll be right back. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's get back to Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments, Department of Education, Department of Energy, those are the executive departments, or of such other body as Congress may provide, by law provide. So in other words, let's say the Congress really doesn't like the president. They could actually, and so why didn't Congress do this with Trump? They could have actually defined a body that they would provide by law and transmit to the president pro tempore. In other words, they could have gotten, as soon as the Democrats took over, but they didn't have control of the Senate. So this is why Congress couldn't do it, because they needed both sides of Congress to be able to cooperate in creating some investigative body to say Trump was unfit and remove him and basically seat Pence. Anyway, because Pence, being a rhino, is an acceptable president. Trump was not. At least that's the paradigm that everybody wants to think. They want you to think that Trump is really, you know, they look at him as a bad president because to the conservatives, he's a good president. I still think that there's no evidence of that. He never got rid of anything. He did do some decent things, but he also did some bad things. He also spent money he shouldn't have spent. Anyway, I don't want to go down his presidency. But as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate, the vice president, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. The vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Now, thereafter, when the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive department or of such other bodies Congress may by law provide, transmit within 4 days to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours for that purpose, if not in session. If the Congress, within 21 days after receipt of the latter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by two-thirds vote of both houses that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall continue to discharge the same as acting president. Otherwise, the president shall resume the powers and duties of his office. Now, if you look at this, you know, this is some shady area to where a corruption, the swamp, and a cooperation between other swamp creatures, such as the executive principals of these executive offices, as well as the vice president, could actually do execute a coup. And it looks like, because Congress is the one that really decides, because we're a representative government, I honestly believe that what should happen, but they didn't include this because Congress wanted to empower themselves. I believe that the electors, the true electors, if we had the Electoral College actually exist, it would be up to the electors, not Congress, to determine whether the president that they chose actually did not, you know, was incapable, and whether they should unseat him. I think that that's who the final body should go to, not Congress, because Congress may actually have incentives and or other things that would drive this type of decision and action. Anyway, the 26th Amendment. This is a short one. And notice that this one did not give themselves the ability to enforce these laws with appropriate legislation or anything like that, nor was there a sunset or an expiration to this. This amendment stood to go out there and to sit. And again, this one was actually proposed in 65 and ratified in 67. Proposed in 71, ratified in 71, the 26th Amendment. the right of the citizens of the United States who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of age. The Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So they finally stuck that back in there. But again, 1971, this was very quickly ratified. And I remember being a kid when this was actually put out there. And I go, wow, they're really moving this. So there were kids in high school that were voting when they were in their senior year. And I'm telling you that they were the least qualified. And that is only because the education system had already been steeped in collectivism and communism. When I graduated, I was in full support of collectivism and big government. And it didn't take me long until I got into the Marine Corps and actually took my oath of office, or not oath of office, but my oath of enlistment. And I started realizing what the Constitution really said. And I go, you know what? I think I would err on the side of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, because even as an idealist of, you know, collectivism that I was taught to be, I still wanted and I still believe that, you know, nobody should be forced and that we should have, you know, our right of conscience and our individual, you know, sovereignty, that we couldn't be compelled into certain things. So even though they were still trying to indoctrinate everybody into collectivism, there was still a little bit of this independent individual that kind of was, I'll just say, was a direct result, or actually was even associated with the counterculture revolution, because there were some narratives that kind of got mixed into this new collective commune type of mentality of the counterculture revolution of do your own thing, close quote. You know, if you remember, you can do your own thing. You do whatever feels good. Do what you want to do. So that all led to, as a part of the counterculture revolution, that all led to this concept that we all had this, you know, this individual sovereignty of choosing for ourselves what we wanted to do. And so I don't believe that the communists really appreciated the American kids, you know, kind of hijacking or taking. It's almost like the French Revolution. The Illuminati was really looking, they were salivating in being able to seize control over France and making France a true communist state. But this guy by the name of Napoleon Bonaparte kind of frustrated that, because he used demagoguery and rose to power just like that. And that was the end of the French Revolution, or I should say that was the end of the French monarchy as well as the communist revolution. Now, secularism still snuck into France, because by this time, before Napoleon had actually risen to power, they were already, you know, cutting off the heads of former, you know, crowns and anybody with a good bloodline. And they were killing and cutting off the heads of the leaders of the church and so forth, because there was a symbiotic, there was a direct relationship back in England and throughout Europe, a direct relationship between the heads of the church and the heads of state. Because the heads of states were being coronated by these men of God. And so anyway, that doesn't happen here. That's never happened in America. Anyway, here's an inoperative article. Now, this was, I believe, the ERA article, yeah, Equal Rights, and it was proposed in 1972, and it expired. They had a 10-year expiration in 1982. They felt that by putting an expiration to this particular amendment, it would have helped and it would have aided more people to coming to, you know, the altar and, you know, getting involved in making sure that the Equal Rights Amendment passed. Now, again, this expired in 1982, and Section 1 of this amendment stated equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. The Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. This amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. So they didn't mention the expiration of this, but it actually expired. There was an expiration date to it. Here is another amendment, get my tongue all tied up, proposed in 78, and it expired in 85, so it was a seven-year expiration. For purposes of representation in Congress, election of the president and vice president, and Article 5 of this Constitution, the district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall be treated as though it were a state. The exercise of the rights and power conferred under this article shall be by the people of the district constituting the seat of government and shall be provided by the Congress. The 23rd article, okay, so we'll get back into this, but this is another power grab that the District of Columbia wanted to create their own state. And they wanted to pervert the whole concept of the seat of the national government by creating a state for it. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here we go. Now, this amendment is inoperative because it was not ratified. And it's still not ratified. And D.C. has been creating this hyperbolic discussion that they have a right to become a state. Are you kidding me? They were defined in the ratification debates as a place that could not become a state because they did not want the federal government to be subject to a sovereign state, period. That's why they were to have autonomy, and that's why Congress was to have exclusive legislation. This, my friends, only goes to show how illiterate, and the reason we're so illiterate is because most people just read the Federalist Papers instead of reading the ratification debates. The ratification debates clearly delineate the differences and sets the terms and definitions for the Constitution, where the Federalist Papers, it was just interesting dialogue. That's all. They may have been insightful in some respects, but they did not create the definitions and terms, especially in the legal aspect that the ratification debates do. Why is it that every time I deal with these types of things, I go, are you kidding me? You're reciting the you're citing the Federalist Papers instead of the ratification debates? And so I when we get into, you know, the marketing that I want to talk about, then we can kind of go into some of this stuff. But let's actually get into the last two, or actually the last one amendment, and this last one that was proposed to be an amendment but was never ratified. Section 1, for purposes of representation in Congress, election of the president and vice president, and Article 5 of this Constitution, the district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall be treated as though it were a state. The exercise of the rights and powers conferred under this article shall be by the people of the district constituting the seat of government, and shall be provided by the Congress. The 23rd article of the amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall be ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the United States within 7 years from the date of its submission. Now, as far as I see this, this is a very problematic amendment. They do not deal with Congress's exclusive legislation. In other words, there's no mention of Article 1 in here. There is no mention of the seat of government and Congress having exclusive legislation and the autonomy that the seat is to provide the federal government. And so this is literally, this is what happens as we start meandering, and this becomes indicative when you see a power-thirsty government. Because when government wants more power, they're seeking actually more power by doing this, because then they have the influence. And if you understand who has the greatest influence of government today, it is the left. It is the communist movement. The globalists have both the Republican and Democratic Party. There are some Republicans that have principles, but they're far and few between. And so when it comes down to the ratification of an amendment, and as a matter of fact, I believe that this was proposed by Congress in 1978. Now, Congress was very liberal at that point, even though I think Congress in 1978, because this was the election year this was halfway through Jimmy Carter's term. So this amendment was written probably when we had a liberal Congress, and there may have been, because this was the midterm election year, this may have been a liberal Congress that passes. But my point is the two-thirds of both houses of Congress agreed for this amendment, and it was proposed to the states but never ratified. That should scare everybody. The two-thirds of the swamp creatures were okay with allowing the progressives to obtain an extra representation because they wanted to create this sovereign state over Washington, D.C. Are you kidding? There should have been far more Republicans that would have voted against this, because I'm going to tell you that there were more than one-third Republicans in the Senate and more than one-third Republicans in the House. So this just goes to show you that the Republicans are a part of the leftist strategy, especially those at the national level. There's no way you're ever going to change the national level of the Republican Party, and they're the ones that own the brand. You'll never be able to utilize, when they start flexing their muscle and saying states can't be, you know, standing on the Constitution, they've already gone down this path back in the marches in what was it, North Carolina or South Carolina, whichever, where, you know, these bad behavior of thugs driving over protesters and so forth. And it was bad behavior on both sides. And this is when Trump was in office. And the Republican National Committee came right out and started disparaging any patriots that were supporting the Constitution. I'm telling you, folks, they've already drawn the battle lines. And we are their enemies. The Republicans have gone after any type of group that starts espousing, and they're in full support of going after people that are trying to support the Constitution. This is the Republican National Committee. So, yeah, you may be able to convert a state and get a state to stand up, but it's only a matter of time when enough states start standing up that the Republican Party will say, you must cease and desist, or we will disband you, and we will bring in and help you reorganize the Republican Party on the values that we tell you that you have to have. Because that's what an authoritarian, that's what a leftist government, and that's a leftist paradigm. Just do not think that that is the paradigm of collectivism. That's the paradigm of communism. That's the paradigm of compulsion. Remember the paradigm of liberty. Remember the scale of liberty to the far, you know, to the far end of the scale of liberty. The extreme point of liberty is every person must choose for themselves. On the other end is full compulsion, full slavery. You have no choice. You will be told what you can do, how you can do it, and whether you can do it. Anyway, so again, this was an inoperative amendment, but they're trying to reinitiate this. Now, Article 27, this is the 27th amendment to the Constitution, proposed in 1789 by James Madison as a part of the Bill of Rights. Ratified in 1992, and as it says here, this is the second of the 12 amendments comprising of the Bill of Rights. So there's still one out there, friends, that should be ratified, and that is the very first amendment, and it is the amendment that actually would displace Congress back to your home states, where we have the ability to actually have virtual Congress meetings and so forth, and make it harder and harder for them to go into the corners and the dark alleys and the back rooms to be making these deals. And it also removes access to one half of Congress for the lobbyists to be able to go through every congressman's office in one day and say, you're going to be behind this here. This is how you're going to vote. That goes away because now these folks are back in their home state, and lobbyists will have to travel and or exist in every state. You see the point here? There are so many upsides to actually displacing the House of Representatives and getting them to actually represent you. It makes it harder and harder for Congress to be, at least the people's side of Congress, to be controlled by the globalists. All we have to do then is actually repeal the 17th Amendment. And as a matter of fact, all we have to do is rescind it. I'm the one that says, you don't have to repeal it. I'm the one that's actually saying that. Now, to be fair and to be clear, it was Douglas Gibbs that kind of started this concept of the Amendment Protection Clause of Article 5. I did more due diligence on this, and I said, hey, you know, this isn't just something that a few states cannot have to follow, but this thing can actually be rescinded because the government has allowed the actual 17th Amendment to be changed by the states on their positions. So anyway, proposed 1789 by James Madison, no law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. So in other words, there has to be an election after the senators and representatives vote themselves a raise. There has to be an election to actually remove that, because this gives the people a chance to remove these guys that have, ingratiated or, gave themselves their own bonus or perk. It gives us a chance to actually vote these guys out and say, get people to run and say, I will work and we will repeal this. We will make sure that this repeals and we don't take this kind of money from the trough of the people. You know, I'm going to say this, that I find it interesting how the people of America do not believe that there should be fair compensation for those lawmakers, for those who are the sovereigns in our government. I just find it interesting how these people need to be doing it on their own, which makes them far more susceptible to bribery and other things. I'll carry on this right after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so before I go any further, one of the things I need to start including in the obligatory is Constitution classes. Now, a dear friend of mine, Keith Broders, who has been, he spent a large part of his life, probably more than I have, in trying to help educate people on the Constitution. And so he has a constitutioneducation.us page that you can go, and it is free Constitution classes. One of the things he has done is he's created like a test that takes little parts or sentences out of the Constitution, and he removes a word. And so the challenge is, what word is missing so that, you know, you can always look at the Constitution and try to find out what word is missing, or hopefully you can read it and go, oh, this is the word that's missing, because you know the Constitution well enough. So it's a brilliant way to learning what the Constitution really says. What that means is a lot different, because you have to actually read the ratification debates on a lot of this stuff as to what some of this stuff means. And I am here to tell you that there's no way you can actually, because I've seen plenty of people actually cite the Constitution word for word, verbatim, by the Supreme Court justices, chief justices like Marshall, and actually twist what that means so that it serves and helps aggrandize government's role. So don't tell me that you can actually read the Constitution and create an accurate class and actually be able to get into the nuts and bolts of what the Constitution is, how to support it, and so forth, when I truly believe that the only way you can truly understand the Constitution is by the ratification basis. The same thing with the Ten Commandments. You have to read the scriptures to understand them. Anywho, this past weekend, before I go down to some of the marketing, the news, and so forth, this past weekend, I got involved in a dialogue with some, I'll just say, patriots out of Arkansas. It was the Arkansas Tea Party Facebook page. and they were complaining about Social Security, or there's this post about Social Security and it, you know, tax is theft. And I disagreed with them, and I said, actually, tax is not theft. Tax is something that the federal government can do. However, Social Security is unconstitutional, therefore it is tyranny. The Social Security tax is tyranny, not theft, because if the government has the ability to tax, but it can only attack or tax for certain things in certain ways. And so as soon as they were able to create direct income taxes, they created this unconstitutional mechanism, giving the federal government the ability to create a retirement plan, which is not an enumerated power. And this is why I go back to the 16th Amendment. The 16th Amendment provided no new powers. It only changed the mechanisms of how they could tax, because they were already heading down this path of being able to tax labor, because actually when you read the Constitution, they have the ability to direct tax. They could have taxed labor, but they never, and they do, and the 16th Amendment allowed that, but the 16th Amendment didn't take care of one other little problem called the Uniformity Clause. Okay, it's not tied to apportionment. So in other words, one state could actually be paying a lot more and another state would be paying a lot less, because it's not to be equal. It's not to be apportioned by the head count of representation. It's a direct tax that goes to every individual. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that there still has to be uniformity, because it did not address the Uniformity Clause. Anywho, back to this whole Social Security thing. This, as I provided some information for this guy on Republic Review, he came back to me and said, well, both are constitutional. I said, well, what do you mean both? And he said, oh, then he, you know, posted, or his reply was, the Article 5 Convention and the nullification, both are constitutional. And I said, and then he provided a quote, or actually an article that was written by Chris Ann Hall. And I know a lot of people love Chris Ann Hall. She's a very good historian. She sells a nice product, and it's very informative. But when you read this article, she talks about nullification as something that is, and she talks about it in the sense of the South Carolinian definition. Apparently, she's never read Madison's notes on nullification and how if a state goes down to nullify something in the Constitution, and nullification is only regarding things that are wrong with the Constitution. If it is an unconstitutional power, you do not nullify it. You interpose. That's what Madison referred to his actions in 1798. Him and Jefferson were interposing, not nullifying. And that's why the word nullify didn't exist. Now, Jefferson did make comment in the two resolutions. Jefferson did make comment in the response of the 1799 resolution that, yeah, states can, but this state was not going to, and that was because he understood, and Madison understood, and Madison even talked about this in his notes on nullification, that if a state is going to nullify, you know, something in the Constitution and or a law that's within the Constitution, then they have to secede from the government. You know, a good example of that was the slave issue. And when they were told that they had to, and they felt that that part of the Constitution was absolutely abhorrent, it was wrong, it was repulsive, and they weren't going to follow it because it violated the fundamentals of our Declaration as well as the fundamentals of God's law and the laws of nature. And therefore, you know, these states started nullifying. But what they should have done was they should have either, one of two things, they should have either seceded, or they should have demanded and started championing for a Article 5 convention. And see, here's the interesting thing. Everybody out there that is championing for nullification, especially the John Birch Society, they're out there pounding their chest. We got to nullify. We got to nullify. But they're not actually saying that you have to secede, which is actually misleading.
You have to either secede or you have to call for an Article 5 convention. So here's the question. If the John Birch Society is championing for nullification, does that mean, and they're not calling the states to secede in doing so, does that mean that they're supporting the concept of an Article 5 convention? I honestly believe that if you really look at what they're doing, they kind of are. Isn't that ironic? Anyway, let's get into some of the news that really, you know, kind of piqued my interest. And it was, first off, the fundamental testimonies that we see. One of the things that always bubbles to the top in my head when I see Congress, you know, doing this investigation because they're exerting this power that they have over, and it's one thing for government oversight, but when they, you know, they start pulling in Major League Baseball and the Boy Scouts and you know, all of these different entities in America, that we're going to investigate you. They don't have the power to do that. They do have the power of oversight over government. And so when they were actually talking to Miley and the Secretary of Defense and so forth, this was within their boundaries. But the one thing that always bubbles to the top that I have a problem with is this lying to Congress and the FBI being illegal. Now, if you're taking oath and you're taking an oath, then perjury is illegal. But when they call it lying to, you know, the FBI and lying to the, you know, the Congress, well, that's against the law. Well, okay, I understand perjury because Congress is going to swear you in, but come on, the FBI? The FBI is, you know, has no power to actually swear you in to make you perform testimony. I mean, it's the same thing as your local law enforcement. Well, is perjury illegal if as long as you're not sworn in? It may be immoral. But the fact is that why is it that our government is so pure that you can't lie to them? They've made these laws, and I'm going, that's unconstitutional to actually say they created a law that you can't even lie to this unconstitutional agency called the FBI. They don't have any power within the United States Constitution, or actually the Constitution for the United States. They do not have the power to actually create an enforcement agency called the FBI. They're supposed to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, not the FBI. I'm okay with giving them an amendment, possibly, maybe, to, you know, have the ability to investigate for treason, counterfeiting, and if it was distilled liquor, if that was still illegal, then okay. But actually, the framers were really clear that we were not to, you know, have a standing army or a standing enforcement agency for the federal government, because that was the door, that was the portal of tyranny. Now, into the testimony with Miley, one of the things that really jumps out, and I don't know if I've heard anybody, but I don't listen to the news, and I try to avoid conservative talk just because I'm just tired of the little sound bites and the lack of a solution. I think America should start waking up and demanding what is a real solution. And if it doesn't pan out, then there you go. But the real problem is the conflict between Miley and Biden and their words. I think this opens the door for Congress to actually demand Biden come and testify. I see this after the midterms when the House goes back to the Republicans. We're going to see this play out. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort.
We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.